Welcome to The Behavioral Prophet, where business meets behavior. I'm your host, Debbie Longo, executive behavioral coach, and each week we dive into the mindset, leadership strategies, and cultural behaviors that drive higher performance and greater profits with you leading a team and building a business. This is not just a space to learn how human behavior fuels business success. We have a very special guest today, Sid Mohabed, a visionary leader whose career spans CEO and board-level roles across multiple industries, from leading billion-dollar consulting firms to serving as president of the largest angel investment organization in the United States. With experience as our partner and managing director at firms like KPMG and Enterprise with $26 billion in revenue, he brings decades of insight into what only drives business transformation. But what sets him apart is his core belief: who we are, our emotions, our experiences, and even our blind spots shape what we do. For him, behavior is not a sidebar to leadership, it's the foundation. Cultures are built by behavior, and in turn, culture determines creativity, contribution, and result. You'll also hear the story of a personal real estate negotiation that reveals how emotional intelligence and human connection can triumph where logic alone fails. If you're ready to move beyond titles and tactics and into the heart of effective leadership, this episode is for you. Good afternoon, Sid. Welcome to the show. Pleasure to have you here. Would you like to add anything to that intro?
There's nothing more we could say. And the list is that it's not about me in general of what I've accomplished. I believe it's about them and what people can accomplish. That begins in their mind and their mindset and how their emotions work together, how they put the pieces of the puzzle together. So let's focus on them and less on me.
So there's a few questions here. Why frameworks are only as useful as the people and problems they solve? I would appreciate that.
In business, in MBA schools and in a lot of places, we're fascinated with this idea as let's follow this framework. And it has certain elements to it. And it could be a management framework. It could be a performance framework. It could be an HR framework. And then we have these best practices that we learn from. In business school, we teach students. But the problem with that is life is not like a cake. That means the pieces don't fit together nicely and cleanly. And you can't say, okay, take piece A and screw it in piece B, and then piece C, bring it to at an angle of there, and boom, you have a bookcase. You have success. That is an illusion we've been driven to believe in a way, because it makes life simpler. Every kid is different. There are thousands of books raising kids, and show me that exactly works. It doesn't. So raising a child is like raising a business. Leadership is right to grow a company. We are all individuals with very unique characteristics. There's 110 billion people that on the face of the earth that have come and gone. There's 8 billion now. Name two that are exactly the same. We're all different. What is practical for me is not practical for you. So the idea is, yes, there is learning that we can take from these frameworks of how Jeff Bezos has done it. But the tailoring of those things means that it has to fit my organization, because just as I am unique, everyone in my organization is unique. They are here for a reason, and it's not necessarily money. It's a bundle of satisfaction. It includes creativity that we can give them. It includes security. It includes the benefits. It includes the opportunity to make money. It includes their ability to be with their family. That's why they become a part of us as a company. Each person has a set of satisfaction, reasons to be with us, as a customer to buy from us, as a partner to partner us, or as an investor to invest in us. So here's where I say that the framework idea has to have the flexibility. It's a learning point. It has to put the pieces of the puzzle of success and leadership and culture together with the understanding of the reasonings that satisfies the people in our ecosystem and ourselves. So here's the argument. We write something on a wall that we are a company that believes in people and believes in creativity. That doesn't create culture. What creates culture is if those people who are joining us have a belief of being creative, being honest, diligent, productive, or whatever it is that we want that culture to be. So it begins with who we attract, as opposed to pushing some sort of a framework for a culture. Let's have a 4th of July hamburgers in the backyard and talk about how great we are. It works bottoms up, not top down, regardless of what framework we use. I hope that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Thank you very much. My experience has been that people and their mind, because the mind controls everything, make it useful for themselves. And depends on your thought pattern and what you're thinking and how you're thinking it, and even whether you want to be useful or not. The framework is the thought, it's the thinking, but it can be translated to a physical thing. The mind and your behavior and how you come to make that framework possible, or even create a thought for that framework, any type of thought at all, that to me is the original thing that happens. Then I build the framework. In a way, that might not always be the case, because people might think of something physical or something solid as that, and they just do it that way. They just think of it that way, and they don't realize that their mind can alter it or think of it in a different way in order for them to get maybe more of a benefit out of it, or maybe it become more useful, different things like that.
For one thing, I say common sense is not that common. The point that you're actually suggesting is one of the key pillars of my belief. We have the Anabase Academy that fuses mindfulness and entrepreneurship, which is at the core of who we are. Mindfulness means being aware of situations, being aware of emotions, being aware of the reality of life. If I want to accomplish something and I don't have the money, or the right customers, or they're not ready, those are realities that impacts execution. That's what I think. It matters what it is. So mindfulness is about, I use the term actuated mindfulness, stimulated to connect to results mindfulness. A lot of people talk about mindfulness as going into, we're thinking about, oh, isn't it that we're connected to this? I realize that my fears are this. I'm not against meditation, but meditation without detachment to actual, you have to be attached in order for you to realize results, impact in real life. This idea of I'm completely detached, sit here on the top of a mountain or in a basement of a room or in front of an ocean, and I think about great things and then I come out, it doesn't work. So mindfulness is at the core of looking at what I call our death zone. People call it the comfort zone, where we think everything is awareness, and the need for awareness drives our ability to listen without our biases and say, here's the reality of people. This is how people feel when they work for our company. This is not an illusion, and our behavior is influencing their behavior. It's not abnormal to get results from people within the thing, because that's the reality. But the key is to actuate mindfulness, to take mindfulness and that awareness into impact, reality, actions and reactions. Our decisions have consequences. Our progress has to do with choice. So I always say the best friend we have is change, but people see it as the enemy, something that has to be managed, something has to be controlled. If we didn't have change, our children would never grow up. We'll have McDonald's for lunch every day. We'll do the same thing every day. It is change that gives us options towards prosperity, towards more, towards better. Gives us the opportunity to choose. It is this ability, looking at change, looking at it within the context of awareness of our reality, for the sake of change is not necessarily a good thing. Being mindful of who we are, our ecosystem, with clarity of thought that is not around false hope. It's not being fearless. It's being aware of the fears that are approaching us, because fearless is stupid. If I'm fearless and I don't see dangers in me, this is some of these stuff that you see on Instagram and Facebook and so forth in terms of motivational nonsense. These are stopping us from actually realizing we are in control. We need to learn. I'm not against learning. We need to look at the framework, at books. But there are no two people who practice leadership the same way. There are thousands of leadership books out there. But depending on the situation, depending on who you're speaking to, depending on where you are, who you are, what your business is, and all of that, your leadership style changes. It should change. I don't care if there are 10,000 books out there. What matters is how you individually put those pieces of puzzle together. It's good to learn, but it's dangerous to follow lifestyle life thinking, I'm like Elon Musk. I am like Jack, I'm like somebody else. You are unique. Realizing that authenticity, realizing that uniqueness, and realizing that everybody that works with you, from your colleagues, your employees, to your friends, to your family members, they're all unique too. That is at the core of how we behave, how we practice mindfulness, how we activate it to actually connect us to outcomes, results, prosperity.
Okay, so the next question is, how behavioral leadership drives trust, innovation, and change? So if you could maybe combine those three things, talk a minute about each one and then combine it. Innovation and change.
Let's take an organization and we have employees. Let's just take that dimension. Forget about the customers, the partners, investors, and how we interact with the society, because those are the five pillars of any organization. Let's just focus on the employee. We have an assumption that when we hire somebody, we give them a job description, a salary, and we expect a certain level of productivity from these people. Who has the decision to join the company? Us or them? They make the final decision. When they say, I like to take on this job, they are processing it based on their own set of reasons. The job offers 2 days working from home. I like that. The job offers good benefits. My wife or my husband has a health problem, so the benefits is good. The job takes me to California. I have a boyfriend or a girlfriend in California. I like to be close to them. The job pays me $100,000. I think I'm worth really $200,000, but the rent is due. So I'm going to quit at 5 o'clock every day and I'm going to do something else after that. We choose as the employee, not as the employer. The employee chooses how much productivity they create, how much capability they bring in, how much creativity they bring in, how much innovation they bring in, how much commitment they bring in. They choose based on their own set of reasons. The fact that they do that requires this notion of them being satisfied with what you offer them. And that is at the core of trust. They have to trust that you are genuine. There is alignment between the two of you. And if there is trust, then I would believe that the direction that you're taking me is the right direction. Otherwise, I wouldn't trust. I wouldn't go in that direction. I wouldn't. People change when these two things exist. One, there is severity of a problem or an opportunity. That is, I would change if I see the company is going broke and I have to do something. Or there is such a wonderful opportunity ahead for me and for the company, my career, my family, satisfying my needs that I would define, that I would like to change. Then the question is, what is the direction of change? Usually the leader says, here's our vision to change. The only reason that I would follow that leader is if I trust them. If I trust, then I would follow. So I will change. Otherwise, why would I change? There has to be a reason for it and there has to be a direction of it. The direction is a leadership issue and the leadership requires trust. Trust is a funny thing. People think that you trust me, I trust you. But there is a three-way trust. It's not a two-way trust. The first thing is I have to trust myself as a leader. Genuinely trust. Not BSing myself that I'm capable of conquering the universe, seeing myself in the White House or as the head of this or that. Trusting my abilities and trusting I can change, I can evolve, I have these issues and I can recover. And trusting, genuine trust in me and my capabilities and who I am. Then I have to invest trust in others. I don't expect them to trust me. Then I have to trust them first. And if I do those two things, what comes back is a compounding effect of trust, their trust in me as a leader. And that is an unbelievable three-way trust. Now there's a partnership. Now there is collaboration in a particular direction. Now a culture begins to form, to shape.
And the last question is, why seeing others clearly beyond money, ego, or assumptions can unlock powerful outcomes in business and life?
I believe, and this is after 40 years of doing business. I'm an immigrant. I came to the United States when I was 16 years old by myself. I have built a number of companies. I have worked, as you mentioned at the beginning, in a lot of startups. I have helped a lot of companies grow. I've learned a few things in my journey. We talked about this idea of mindfulness and actuating mindfulness. So that's one piece. Each one of us have the ability to build greatness, and it is in our gene. We are designed not just to survive, to thrive, to create better, to create more. People think an entrepreneur is someone who makes a lot of money, someone who's a BSer, all of that hoopla. That's not the case. The definition of entrepreneur, which was originally introduced in the 1700s, is an entrepreneur is someone who has something, who wants to exchange it with something better. It could be your time. It could be a product. It could be an idea. It could be a service. You want to exchange that with something better, of higher value. You decide what you have, and you decide what higher value. And knowing that there is risk, I may not get everything I want. This is essentially in our genes to want better. We are all entrepreneurs. We can take what we have and exchange it with something better if we realize we have that ability. It's the same in life and business. You and I, as an individual, in our lives want to create better. Maybe it's making a better dish for lunch or dinner. Maybe it's we have a kid, we want to take him to Disneyland because it's fun. Maybe it's a date night. Maybe it's spending time with our children at some ball game. We have work, we have our relationships, we have our friends. We are an enterprise and we're always trying to create better. The same thing applies to a company. It's designed to create better. The better is not always money. The mistake is that I have worked with hundreds of entrepreneurs. I've made investments in tens of companies. And whenever the entrepreneur wanted to focus on money, the results were suboptimal. Because at midnight, at 3 o'clock in the morning, when everything is going wrong, when things don't work, when we face the reality of the difference between a plan and what happens, money is not enough of a motivation to get you across. It's just not enough. That's when you give up. That's when you unfold. That's when you look at other things. That's when you begin to do things that are immoral, that are not the right thing to do. That's when you begin to compromise not only yourself, but your business. So the key is we are all an enterprise. We're all an entrepreneur. We have the mindset, the ability to evaluate things and create better. That's our mindfulness, our awareness. That comes in from how we listen, how we do things, how we create our emotions, how we deal with our emotions, how we see a comfort zone, how we desire to imagine and be better. And if we take all of that together, we have a fusing of mindfulness and entrepreneurship. If you put these two things together, mindfulness as awareness, entrepreneurship as a desire to be better, to create more, as we define it. Martin Luther King is an entrepreneur. Mother Teresa was an entrepreneur. Elon Musk is an entrepreneur. But we decide what is better. And that could be anything. We desire someone who works a cleaning job, gets up in the morning at 6 o'clock, a single mother, and goes to work, takes a bus an hour away, cleans hotel rooms, and makes $10, $12, or $22 an hour, saves that money to take children or grandchildren to Disneyland, she has something. She exchanges it with something better, knowing that there is risk. The kid may not like Disneyland. It may never happen. The risk is that I don't have enough money to pay the rent. We're all entrepreneurs, and that's essentially here. The Anabasis Academy is where we focus on these elements. We focus on provoking people. It's the most non-academic academy. There is no test. There is no conclusion. There is no certificate. It's not for tens of thousands of dollars to join it. If you find your next best version by being provoked, by putting the pieces of the puzzle your way together, because you're unique. If I do that, if our neighbors do that, if your son does that, and if your friends do that, we are going to be in a much better place. Live in a better, people can have a better culture. They can have better behaviors because they understand who they are, because they understand their communities, because they understand that we're not alone with our own driving force.
You touched on a lot of different topics and different ways that the mindfulness and the entrepreneurship come separately and then they go hand in hand. And what I teach starts off that way, but then that helps the person to create whatever their goal or dream is. Maybe they're an entrepreneur and they want to establish a company, or maybe they're a solo entrepreneur, maybe they're from a medium business and they want to go to a big executive type position. It's not only the first step, because sometimes the first step is the giant step. If I get through that, then I could do all different things. That depends on really what the person wants. You were saying before, the person determines what job they're going to go to. The company doesn't, because the company has to sell their position. They literally have to sell the position to the candidate because they have to hire somebody and they want to hire the best person. How does mindfulness connect with how I'm performing at work and whether I want to get a promotion or not? How am I treating my peers, my boss? Am I trying to control and manipulate my boss? Am I trying to make my own rules and not want to follow the job duties the way that I'm told? How does mindfulness connect with that than what you're saying? I work much deeper than that. So I'm just curious about that as the last question.
The idea is the journey begins with the first step, as they say. The giant leap is the realization that I am designed as a human being wherever I am. If I'm in high school, college, if I have a PhD, if I have sold 3 companies and I'm wealthy, doesn't matter where I am. I am designed to create better. I have that ability within me genetically. That is a recognition that a lot of times is lost. The purpose of the way that you look at the world. I'll give you an example. They asked two people who were working on a construction site, hey, what do you do? The first guy says, I'm digging ditches, laying pipe, making a living. They asked the second one, he says, I'm building a hospital to cure the sick. They were doing exactly the same job. The perception of what they are doing, what the cause, what the drive, what is internal to us, the creation of I am doing something better than just survival, that is critical. That is realizing I do have a choice. I do have a capability. The second is, if I do have this control, this choice, how do I guide? How do I win? How do I prosper? And that's activating the mindfulness part. I have the ability. Just because I have the ability, that doesn't necessarily mean I sleep and in the morning is greatness. There's work to be done. That work is about not only just sitting in a mountaintop and thinking great deals and then coming down and you have employees and not paying them, doing hard things, saying the wrong things, hurtful, and not being empathetic to them, either from an employee's perspective or an employer's perspective, just to actuate that awareness into reality. If you combine those two things as a first step, not as a last step, now, there is a lot to do. Every day we have thousands of decisions. Every day at every given point in time, I may be wealthy, I may be poor, I may have one leg, two legs, no legs. I may be an IQ of this. Or we are all different. So the practice of doing those things gets into a lot of detailed activities, a lot of detailed relationships, psychologies, a lot of behavioral issues. So there is a lot more, as you say, in the detail, but it all begins with what I would say provoking people to see that they are an entrepreneur, activating their mindfulness. There is a better version of themselves. If they get into that practice, there's nothing to stop. If folks believe or resonate with what I'm saying, I would encourage them to go to the academy. It's called Anna Bases Academy. Anna means moving up in Latin, and Bases means the best. So it's A-N-A-B-A-S-I-S, academy.org. And there's a place they can join our wake-up calls, which is for free. We have a membership that's $1 for life. So you can see the approach that we're taking. It's a movement, in my opinion, to provoke and engage people, and we're a learning partner. I don't have all the answers. Collectively, we can put the pieces together. You may have a piece, and I may have a piece, and somebody in Philippines, and we have people from Africa, from China, from all across the U.S. joining us on these wake-up calls, and then going into other things that we do. We have conversations with experts. We have these collections that are small, 5-7 minute videos, lots of stuff. If you believe that you can evolve and experience more, the first step is to be provoked. And that's the choice, to be provoked. It's not motivational. I can't give you motivation. All this stuff on social media, I'll do three things and four things, you're going to be trillionaires and you're going to have a great life, is nonsense.
So the last thing that I want to say is I do all different industries, and that gives a lot of different suggestions, opinions, outlooks about how to perform in all different industries. If you're listening to this and anything we say attracts you, or you're in this type of industry, or you do this type of work, then you might want to consider trying some of these or getting in touch with us, because it comes, like Sid was saying, it starts with me. It comes with the first step of me. And do I want to try this, do something different, make a difference in my life, become a different person, the person that I am not now? This is the reason why I do these podcasts. It's for the listener. And I really want to get that point across, because I think that's very important, because I'm trying to get a wide range of people. This podcast is not narrow. The more exposure I get, the more people relate to it, the more people are able to listen. So how can they get in touch with you?
They can go to the site, anabasesacademy.org, and there's contact us. Also, my name, sid@mohasib.com, is my email, so they can reach out to me that way.
Thank you for being on the show.
It was great to spend time with you. Thank you, Debbie.